Where's that bread? Got it. Okay, hey everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. We're back for the 54th, count them, 54 session of the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition. We have a ton of talked about of today. It is, what is it, June 14th. We will meet again next week, June 21st. June 28th is a bit up for grabs. It's my 33rd, count them, 33rd wedding anniversary. Although, as my wife points out, it's 33 for me, but 66 for her. My mother actually said that. We had a 50th anniversary celebration from my mother and father, and somebody asked her what it's like to be married for 50 years, and she said, 50 for him, 100 for me. She wasn't kidding either. My dad was a great guy, but he was a handful. So we're joined by Jan Bandor, a great organizer from Michigan. I assume Ray McClendon's going to join us. Tatanka, great to see you from the world of the indigenous. Harry Hawkins from the Green Party, the great Bob Fetrakis is with us, a true pioneer of the election protection movement. And so many other great people are with us so often. We're at 57 right now, different varieties. And we have a very, very full agenda. We're gonna start with the great Andrea Miller, truly one of the magnificent grassroots organizers of our time. And I say that with total sincerity. We're gonna start with Democracy Centers. Ray McClendon is with us, that's great. And of course, Charles Moreland, you'll join in with that, and Howie to talk about setting up Democracy Centers in DC, or at least one as we advance towards our great end of August, March. We also really wanna have a big focus now on SB4. Or HB4, the John Lewis bill, because it looks like HB1 may be dead, but HB4 is being supported by Joe Manchin, who is currently running the world, and we believe.
Right, I got my little Zoom meeting going. I got a Zoom meeting. I got to run.
Somebody's not here. Brian Steinberg. Okay. So we really want to talk about the possibilities of building a national movement around HB4. And also the question, which keeps arising now in the news, is that Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, certainly with the approval of the President, Joe Biden, is talking about serious enforcement of election protection. And one of the things that popped up in the Times, I have to hand it to the New York Times, they've been on this case. Today, they ran a front page article about the impact that these Jim Crow laws in the States are gonna have on the disabled. And if we can put the link in the chat, or you can go to the New York Times, they have a woman in a wheelchair with cerebral palsy saying basically that given the nature of these disenfranchised bills, she will not be able to vote. And that, you know, speaks to literally millions of the disabled in this country. So that's an issue that we really haven't raised before, but it's something worth looking at. I've also asked Steve and Mike, when you get a minute, a columnist named Ezra Klein has written a spectacular article on poverty in America, saying basically it's a conscious choice that we have people impoverished in this country. And it's one of the best pieces I've ever read about poverty. There's also an amazing piece, I did not send you the link, but it's at the San Francisco Chronicle. There's all this complaining at Chipotle about how raising wages of the workers at Chipotle are gonna cost you more for your burrito. Well, this guy Hetzig, he's a really good columnist at the San Francisco Chronicle. I neglected to get the link, I'll send it later. Wrote a piece about how these poor executives at Chipotle voted themselves almost $60 million in bonuses for the COVID year. And their new CEO insisted on, as a condition of hiring him, that they move headquarters to Southern California. And that's costing Chipotle $80 million. So between bonuses for the executives and moving their headquarters, Chipotle blew $140 million on their executives, and they're complaining about raising wages to $15 an hour. I'm sorry the recording is on because I have some real choice words for that, which I'll have to forgo. But it's outrageous. And you need to go look at the article by Ezra Klein. And I'll dig up the one about Chipotle. Really worth looking at. Okay, so today we're gonna go with, start with democracy centers, which are a key part of the long-term enfranchisement strategy. Andrea Miller and Howie have really been the pioneers on this. And Andrea in particular has been talking about with Charles Moreland about doing one in DC. And then we'll jump to the John Lewis Act. And we'll talk about the Georgia Miracle with Ray McClendon. And we'll also talk with Ray Lutz about the latest from Arizona. And we also want to include Jan Bandora in the Georgia Miracle discussion because we want to start talking about the Georgia/Michigan Miracle. So we got a totally full agenda. We will go, we'll be recorded till 6:40 Eastern, and then we'll kibitz for another 20 minutes when the four letter words can come back into play. So let me turn it over to the great Andrea Miller, starting to talk here about democracy centers. Howie will talk about his also, and Joel jump in, Charles, and then we'll move ahead. Andrea, please.
Hey, thank you very, very much, Harvey. All right, democracy centers, what are they? Basically, these are grassroots centers that are in state that operate year round in support of the community. They are there to address the community's pain point and to turn non-voters into voting rights advocates. Our first democracy center opened up in Hawkinsville, Georgia, and we have another one in Florence, South Carolina. In Hawkinsville, Georgia, on June 18th, they are going to open a food pantry. They had been feeding the community the last Friday of every month. People came to the Democracy Center and they said, we're not hungry one day a month, we're hungry all the days of the month. So they've opened a food pantry and they've made it exactly like a grocery store, meaning people walk in, you get a shopping cart, you go up and down the aisles, you select exactly what you want, no box of prepackaged food, and you don't have the ability to select what you want for yourself. So the first order was we want to treat people with human dignity and treat them like they are responsible adults. When you check out by receiving voting information and they check your voter registration. In Florence, South Carolina, they are working on generating clean water from solar because the community does not have clean water. The other thing they are working on is South Carolina has secret elections. The city council in Florence has a vacancy in the 6th district. Nowhere on the state website, on the Florence website, can you find any information about that election. But because that seat is vacant, there is going to be an election. So the Florence Democracy Center will be working on letting people know that there is indeed an upcoming election for that vacant city council seat and that they will be able to vote. Now, in June, July, and August, we are going to be opening a range of democracy centers. In Virginia, we're opening Richmond. They're going to be working on broadband. City of Richmond is not rural, so we do have broadband. It's just not affordable. So we have currently put in a, quote, bid or a request to our senator for $1.1 million to provide free broadband for 1 year to 2,000 families. These were families where their children did not go to school because they didn't have broadband and a whole host of other problems. So we're going to be looking to help solve those. Now, in Alabama, we're going to be opening three with our partners, Omega Psi Epsilon. We're going to be opening in Huntsville, Selma, and Mobile. We also now are going to be talking with Monroeville, North Carolina, and Cobb County, and then also Savannah. And our soon to be open, probably August, maybe earlier, will be kind of like the big cherry on top, will be Washington, D.C., where they will be working, of course, on D.C. statehood and again, other local pain points. I want to invite everybody to an event that will be this Thursday night at 8 o'clock, and I'm going to drop the link in the chat. It is called Four Generations of Civil Rights Activists. So it will be me, my mentor, Dr. William Ferguson Reed, who was 96 years young. He founded Crusade for Voters in Richmond in 1954, the year that I was born. So he represents Generation One. I'm Generation Two. Cliff Albright of Black Voters Matter will be Generation Three. And Evan Marlborough of the Georgia Youth Poll Worker Project, he will be Generation Four. So I hope you can join us. That will be really, really great. And thank you, Harvey.
Well, thank you, Andrea. And I think by now people should be somewhat familiar with the shape of a democracy center somewhere. Call on Howie in a minute, but Myla Reason, you have a hand?
I do.
You're muted.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, thanks. Andrea, I was wondering how you are, what you're thinking of in terms of helping people to improve water quality. One of the things that I've been hearing a lot from, I've been involved with people in Elizabeth City where Andrew Brown was killed by police last month. And April. And it's been like 55 days now. And what I am told is that the water quality is particularly bad. And I'm wondering, has anyone reached out to you from that community in terms of possibly, no? And do you
We work in the South. New Jersey is not the
no,
South.
No, 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 North Carolina. It's North Carolina, just below Virginia. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And, okay, and how,
but the question is, how are you helping people address the issue of poor water quality in the South?
We mentioned that. Not dealing with water quality generically in the South. We are dealing with water quality in South Carolina because for that community where that democracy center is located, that was their issue. So we are very, very limited to, as we establish a democracy center, the community tells us what their pain point is, and we work with them to address it. What Reverend Woodbury is doing is he is producing water from some very specialized solar panels. So I think they call it water from heaven.
You know, I'd like to see that. If you could put a link about those.
And there is an incredible article that I will drop in the chat about what Reverend Woodbury, are they generating clean water? They are also working on bottling that water and creating a cooperative bottling company.
Wow, fantastic.
Yes.
That's wonderful. Yes. We need to spread that to Tatanka. I bet that will be of interest to the indigenous community for sure out in the desert. And maybe in LA. That's what I need to put on my roof in LA before electricity. So excellent. Jed Powell.
And I just dropped the link in the chat, the Water from Heaven, South Carolina Pastor's Crusade for Clean Drinking Water. And the EPA has told them their water is pure. So they are going to need to scale up so they can produce more. Then they're going to look at bottling. And again, their economic model will not be vulture capitalism, but a cooperative so that the money remains in the community and enriches the community.
Fantastic. We really need that.
Now, there are not going to be very many of these democracy centers. And right now, I am funding them out of our operating budget. We're expecting money, but it hasn't come in. So we have groups that we have worked with in the past, and that is where we are putting democracy centers, in groups where we know there are collections of people and organizations willing to work together.
Fantastic. I want to say, by the way, I want to welcome our listeners at the Progressive Radio Network. I miss doing that up front, PRN-FM. We're on Thursdays, 5 p.m. Eastern time. There's 71 people on the call right now, so join in. And then after the hour, you can go to electionprotection2024.org and pick up the link and listen to the rest of the show. Jed Palker, George Ripley, and then we'll go to Howie Hawkins. Jed?
Yeah, thank you so much. Andrea, I have a quick question for you. What was the town that you said did not have elections posted on their website? I want to go double check and make sure that I have the latest information on Voterizer for them.
It's Florence, South Carolina. When you go to their website, you look at city council, you will see all the city council members. And then it says very plainly that District 6 is vacant. And it says the term expires in December 2022. However, on that site, you can find no mention of an upcoming election to fill that seat.
Great election.
Maybe they'll appoint Donald Trump to the city council.
Well, I guess they figure if nobody runs for it, like you said, then they can appoint somebody. Darn that election. You missed it.
Yeah, right. George.
Over my dead body, I would not let Trump be in any political system.
George Ripley? You gotta unmute, George. You're muted. Unmute.
Did I? Yeah.
There you are.
You raised a hand. Hey, did you not mean to raise a hand?
No, I did. This is an issue. The water issue is one that interests me. Everyone's probably aware of driving through the country in the back roads and seeing a pipe sticking out of the ground and water coming out of that pipe. And it seems to be, I hope I don't see a lot of heads nodding, but you know that there are public springs all over the country where the public can just go up and fill up a big jug of water, and people do. But it seems to me that every county in the country ought to have a public spring where the public can go out and dependably get good, clean, fresh water.
Well, if it comes from a solar panel, then at least you know it's clean. So thank you for that. Howie Hawkins, you have an operating democracy center. You've described it before. Are still people coming in and asking for advice and stuff?
Well, it's the storefront for the Green Party, but the door is open to anybody, and people do walk in. Big issues around here are police brutality, inequity in the treatment of bail for Black folks versus white folks. We don't have a grocery store within a couple miles of where I'm sitting in the storefront. That's a big issue. Food, affordable housing, jobs, crime, you know, the usual kind of urban issues. So people come in, we have discussions. Sometimes those lead to actions. So I guess you'd call that a democracy center. We fund it with dues out of the local Green Party, and we can afford it because we're a broke-ass Rust Belt city where for $250 a month, we got 2,500 square feet.
Jeez.
This is in a business district where there's very little business, but there's lots of foot traffic from people around the neighborhood. And, you know, we have a reputation that you got an issue and city council won't deal with it. Go talk to those Greens. You know, we'll fight anybody.
Well, the idea of combining it with a food pantry, I think, is terrific. And if you put a food pantry on one side and a pot shop on the other, you'll have a tremendous amount of foot traffic. Jim Bandura, you're clapping your hand. What about Democracy Center in Ann Arbor? What do you think? That would be a big plus, don't you think?
I don't think there's any space left. All those empty stores are now pot shops.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Charles, thank you. Charles Moreland, we were talking about doing one in D.C. Have you got a spot picked out yet?
Well, thank you so very much, Harvey, you and Joel and everybody. And we particularly want to thank Andrea for all that she's doing. She's indeed a jewel. We have been working with Andrea. Let me ask you, do you want me to talk about statehood after I finish?
We will, but we'll get, yeah, you can do that. And then we'll go to SB4. That's fine. Okay. But do you have a place in DC where you think you might be doing a democracy center?
Well, right now we are working on the proposal and we submitted our first draft, and we're very fortunate to have come on board a young lady I want to identify, and I believe she's on board today, Vern Goff. Vern, are you there? Yeah, Vern Goff is going to be working directly with Andrea and Roxanne to finish the proposal. The DC Democracy Center, of course, is going to be unique in many ways, but in particular, because of our objective and our purpose. Every other Democracy Center, I think the focus is going to be voter protection and voter participation. Of course, with the District of Columbia, we're not just fighting against voter suppression. We're fighting against total disenfranchisement. So along with that comes different challenges, and that's one of the things we've been talking about. We also discussed with Andrea the possibility of making the Washington, D.C. Democracy Center a place where, you know, anybody in progressive organization that comes to D.C., you'll have a home. So there are unique challenges, unique goals, and unique objectives. And I do believe that with Vern Goff on board, we'll have that finished in a couple of weeks.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So do you want to do a quick update on D.C. statehood, and then we'll jump into the John Lewis bill, please.
Yeah, I put on the chat the website, and I ask everybody to go on the website and look at the schedule of events. I'm happy to report that we do have a schedule of events on Friday. That's the 27th of August. We're going to have a self-determination awards banquet where we're going to recognize D.C. statehood, you know, supporters and also individuals who've been working, fighting for green jobs, green justice, and justice in general. On Saturday, we're going to have the main march, and that's going to be at the we're going to have three locations. The primary location is going to be the National Mall. We're going to have staging areas at the U.S. Capitol building and Freedom Plaza. And from those two locations, we're going to march to the National Mall. We're also going to have a virtual Dream March. So there'll be two platforms, of course, the actual march from the two staging areas. And then we're going to have virtual platforms in every state. So you can go online. And we'll be updating it, but those are the primary events that we're already organizing. We're also asking you to go online and volunteer to be a, for organizations to volunteer to be participants or sponsors. There's a form to fill out. And all we ask you to do is agree that you're going to support DC statehood, green jobs, and justice.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And I have been in touch with Greenpeace and start with to the solar businesses, and we'll have a good delivery of a solar panel to the White House. So this is great, Charles. Thank you so much. Does anybody want to ask a question about these this march and current status of statehood? The Dream March. I want to mention we're joined by the great Dennis Bernstein, who is the number one guy on KPFA in Berkeley, a great friend and a great newscaster. Dennis, thank you for joining us. Also, Anna Georgie in Western Mass on one of the truly great organic farms in our world. So Charles, I want to, you mentioned Vern Goff. Vern Goff, do you want to say hi, please?
Hello, everyone. Nice to meet you. I look forward to working with each of you.
And you're in DC and you're going to be on the statehood
team. Yes.
All right. Wonderful. Excellent. Okay. Thank you. Thank you all. In a few minutes, we're going to get to the Georgia Miracle, now combined with the Michigan Miracle. It's great to have Jan Bandor on with Ray McClendon. But we do want to start first now with the situation with Ray Lutz. If you can stick around and give us an update on Arizona, that would be really terrific as well. We do want to jump in here. Joel Siegel is going to introduce a discussion on the Charles Lewis Voting Act. We have two developments. First is that Joe Manchin has basically, as far as the media is concerned, it seems, buried Senate Bill 1, which was House Bill 1, the Omnibus Voting Acts bill. He says that he's in favor of Senate Bill 4, House Bill 4, but it's not even been brought to hearing. Joel, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. Thank you, Harvey. Charles Moreland, thank you for being one of the lead organizers, if not the lead organizer on the Dream March. That's like the old school, you know, marching for peace and justice and linking the issues of climate change and voter suppression, DC statehood, green jobs, and justice. So I'm really excited about working with Charles on this, and I hope everybody will participate. And then, Andrea, thank you for these democracy centers. I remember years ago you were talking about them. They were just an idea, and now you've turned them into a reality, so congratulations. So I'm going to put forward a few ideas around HR 4. There will be people who will not agree with some of my, you know, perspectives, and that's okay, because I'd like to hear those who agree and those who, you know, disagree. So we know, according to Mother Jones, that there are 361 voter suppression bills that have already been introduced this year. And these stats are from April 2021. This is from the Brennan Center for Justice. 361 bills have been introduced in General Assemblies and over in 47 states, overwhelming Republican. That's up from 253 restrictive bills tallied as of February 19th, an increase of 43%. According to Mother Jones, it's a backlash to the 2020 historic voter turnout. Under the pretense of responding to baseless and racist allegations of voter fraud and election irregularities, state lawmakers have introduced a startling number of bills to curb the vote. And I'm going to ask Ray and James also to weigh in on this. The question becomes, if they've already introduced these bills in 47 states, do we want them to be introduced in every state? I think the answer would be no. Furthermore, if the 1965 Civil Rights Act, the preclearance provision, is reinstated, then that means that laws that are being passed in these general assemblies, they would have to go to the Attorney General the Department of Justice and ask for permission. And I would say all of them would probably be voted down by the federal government. As authorized by the 1965 Civil Rights Act, one of the challenges that, you know, Andrew Miller was talking about to me earlier today is that the bill would not be retroactive. So that means if, in fact, states have passed, you know, pernicious, racist, Jim Crow voting laws, that even if this bill got passed, that would not negate their impact. Now, typically, if you're a clever lawyer or a politician, you can make the case that even if it's not legally retroactive, you could still have the attorney general bring lawsuits in all the states where they've passed them. And then there's always a great, and Charles, you know about this, and so do you, James Fukuda and Mike Hirsch. There's always a gray area in the law. So let's say there's, I think right now there's 4 to 5 states that have actually passed. I can tell you the 5 restricted bills that have been signed into law are Georgia, Iowa, Arkansas, and Utah. All right. Now, that's laws that have been passed, but if they've been introduced but have not been passed, would they need preclearance? I believe the answer to that would be yes. Now, I just want to give you some facts of the case. Now, let's talk about what are we going to do about it. I think what we need to do is have a sign-on letter by grassroots activists, elected officials, NGOs, that call on Jerome Nadler, who's the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, to bring H.R. 4 to a committee hearing, that's the Judiciary Committee, then to a full House vote. Now, why? One reason is that Manchin has said that he supports H.R. 4. Right now, he opposes H.R. 1. He opposes using the filibuster. If, in fact, we could pass H.R. 4, and we know that we'd have the votes in the Senate and the House, why not go ahead and try to pass that bill? Now, when I've spoken to senior staffers on the House Judiciary Committee, where I used to work, I was told that they want to make the bill litigation proof. Okay. No, I get that. In my experience working with the Republicans, I've never seen a bill in my life that's litigation proof. They're going to sue no matter what, in my opinion. I understand the logic, by the way, of making something litigation proof. I get that. However, I also understand the logic of moving forward on a bill that could be passed, that's needed, that we can get around. And I'm hoping that that letter can be sent to the House Judiciary Committee, signed by as many groups as we can get to sign it, because you've got to impact the staff. Staff run Capitol Hill. They run the Congress, the staff. Then if we could do the same thing on the Senate and on the Senate Judiciary Committee, I think we should get the bill introduced as fast as we can and get it done. But anyway, I wanted to see if Ray, you could weigh in on this and James Fukuda, you know, on this strategy. Do you think that, and then I think we should, I'd like to hear Harvey from as many people as we can about what they think about that idea, pro or con.
Okay, so this is a big one. I don't have to tell you. This is an attempt to essentially revive the Voting Rights Act of the 1960s. And the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, has expressed interest in using the federal DOJ to deal with some of these election protection issues. And it doesn't look good for H.R. 1, which is now S1, but we haven't even had hearings in the Congress, have we, on Senate Bill 4 or House Bill 4. Jan Van Dorn, did you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, thank you. I'm a big believer in momentum. As a baseball fan, I know how that works. And if we can get a bill that has a lot more likelihood of passage, it will give momentum to everything else. I knew that H.R. 1 was DOA the first time it was introduced, and I was pretty sure it was DOA this time because it's too big. And the more Christmas ornaments you put on the tree, the more chances the cats are going to bat them off. And that's what's been happening. I think we need to decenter from HR1, S1 and move to a more successful area. And I'm glad to see HR4 concentrating on all the states. This is what we tried to tell the Lawyers Committee on Civil Rights when they held hearings in Michigan. Hey, it's not just those southern states that are doing these horrible voter suppression things. You got to listen to what's happening up here in Michigan. And they were not willing even to countenance changes in the bill at that point, but we've got to make it a national bill.
Thank you, Jen. I also want to say, Andrea has made a very good point in the chat. Under the 1965 Civil Rights Act, under the preclearance provision, it only covers X amount of states that showed that in the past there was a pattern of, you know, discrimination. Well, now there's a pattern of discrimination in 47 states. So they would have to do a redraft of the bill, in my opinion. I think Andrew is making a very good point.
It's time.
Yeah.
And so with that, Joel, I'll yield my time to Andrea.
And then we'll hear from James too after Andrea and you.
No, go ahead, Andrea.
Harvey's on mute.
Sorry, Andrea, you couldn't read my lips. Andrea. Andrea Miller, and then we'll
get
Jed and James Fukuda.
And Ray, yeah.
And Ray. Andrea, are you still with us? I think Andrea had to go.
Okay.
So Ray, you can take your time back, and then we'll do James, Jed, and Charles, please. Thank you for that, Jan, by the way. It's very astute, much appreciated.
Yeah, well. No, I just want to agree with the last comment. I think one of the problems we have is that the bills, although they're noble in objective, are so broad and cover so many different areas that you can pick off, the opposition is picking off individuals based upon some of the supplemental components of the bill for the People Act. And so I think the existential threat that we have in this country right now begs to deal directly with the voting rights issues and associated in each bill. And so I think you've got a better chance of handling that. I know a lot of people don't want to see that. I don't want to see it, but we got to face reality of where we are and try to craft something that we can put even more pressure on the folks that are potentially on the fence that we can pick off, because we've got to get this passed. If we don't, then none of this will matter in 2024.
100% agree. James Fukuda and then Jed Pauker.
Well, I agree with everything that's been said before. You know, something is better than nothing. And I wouldn't like to give up altogether on some of the elements of H1, S1, but is it going to happen in the next, in the next 12 months? No. No, it's going to take more work on the ground to do that. But one thing I would also point out, getting people to the polls, whatever has to be done, will defeat any law that they can put. If the soul is there and they have all of their documents in order, they can vote. So we're just going to have to find a way to get people there and make sure that they have everything that's required, no matter how hard that is, because that's the only thing we can count on. Everything else, we're playing chess, and we're hoping that the other side doesn't have a good counter move.
Okay, Jed Pauker, thank you, James. And then Charles,
Just very quickly, my question actually was for Charles. I had a question about the website, about the volunteer piece of the website. Just wanted to make sure that it's working, because you don't get a confirmation when you sign up for something.
Charles, that's a double. You were next anyway, so can you answer that and then say what you're going to say?
Yes, we'll make a correction. I'll look into that on the website, because we do need volunteers, as many as possible. I want to agree with what everybody said. And Joel, if yours was a motion, I would second it with a friendly amendment. That amendment being that the most important piece of legislation, I do believe, is the statehood bill. Because with statehood, we can get rid of the filibuster, and we won't have Joe Manchin holding us hostage. Like James said, at the way it is right now, with the Democrats being divided, you might say, but not all in, at best it would be 12 months. And we may never get these bills passed. So that's one of the reasons why people from all over the country are supporting statehood. DC statehood would give us two senators who are not going to just be Democrats. They're going to be probably the most progressive Democrats in the Senate. Mm-hmm. So Joel, that would be the friendly amendment I would make to your suggestion, DC statehood. And not just because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm one of the disenfranchised citizens of Washington, DC. But because DC statehood would give the Democrats and the Senate real and true control of both houses. We got all this other legislation passed.
Nice amendment.
And Joel, can you draft for our next meeting a letter for NADWR that we can all sign on to?
Yes.
All right, that'd be great. That'd be great. Robert Sullivan? You got to unmute yourself. You're muted.
Robert, all right. Thank you. I'm from New Orleans, and I'm very interested in this Democracy Center that Andrea is talking about. But what I'm going to talk about right now is, if we have only HR4, how do we deal with the egregious parts of the acts that have already been passed?
Joel, you got an answer for that? Thank you, Robert.
Yeah, Robert, good question. We cannot abandon HR1. It's too important of a bill. There's too many provisions in the bill that are so important for voting. I think what will probably happen as they're making the sausage, or if you're Jewish, you know, chicken soup of some kind, preferably with matzo balls, if my mother would have her way, they're going to probably have to excise out, you know, issues that are very, very popular to progressives, like campaign finance reform. There's some poison pill provisions in that bill. I think that they should move on HR4 and then work on modifying HR1. So Manchin, I hate to say it, but he's the litmus test now. And, you know, the Poor People's Campaign is having a march on Manchin
today.
Which is very important. Do I think that he's going to budge on HR1? I don't know. But I do know that if you can make an ally of Manchin by crafting a bill that would really go a long way in furthering, you know, efforts to stop voter suppression, you know, and Ray McClendon is very, very, very astute at what maybe that might look like, then you could pass a version of HR1 and HR4. So you're feeding two birds with one seed.
Boy, I never heard that phrase. So, well, listen, so for next week, you'll have something drafted up. Yeah. We'll send it out beforehand, and we'll deal with it. That's great. Does anyone else have anything on the John Lewis Voting Act that they want to put in? Jeffrey, very quickly.
One for Charles and one for Joe Segal on what they said.
Thank you.
First off, Charles, I know you mentioned about getting people to the polls, or is that someone else?
James.
No, whatever. Come on.
Thanks, just, James. What is it? I had an idea. What if we all, if they had all their, oh, that's James. That's right. Oh, James Fukudu. That's right. Anyway, I thought even if they have all their paperwork, someone come. How about we just offer them cookies? Maybe they'll come then.
Okay. And then what else? Is that okay? Thank you for that.
That's one more.
Oh, hurry up, please.
Joe Segal. Someone said about the Democrats being divided. Right.
Yeah.
Which one? Who's that again?
Come on, just ask us. What do you got?
Okay, there's a quote.
Jeffrey, this will be your only question, so go ahead.
There's a quote here that I'm trying to pull.
Okay, well, when you find it, raise your hand again. Does anyone else have anything on Senate Bill 4 or House Bill 4, the John Lewis Act? Okay, we're gonna move ahead. Thank you.
I got it.
What is it? Okay, Jeffrey, what is it?
If we put our differences aside, then we can accomplish great things. It's a quote by Diego Luna.
Okay, thank you. And of course, Will Rogers said he doesn't belong to an organized political party. He's a Democrat. So there you go. Okay, we're gonna talk now about the Michigan-Georgia miracle. Then we'll get to Ray Lutz for the update on Arizona. We got Jan Bendor with us from Michigan, and Ray McClendon, you're proceeding with these interviews from Georgia. Let me give it to and I put you in touch with Jan. Let me give you to Ray first, and then we'll go to Jan. Please, Ray, go ahead.
Okay. Well, we're
Ray McClendon.
Yeah, thanks, Harvey. We are now winding down on the interviews. We've had some extraordinary interviews with grassroots organizers from across the entire state, and most notably, many from outside of the metro area who've been toiling in the vineyards for grassroots organizing for years, in some cases, decades. We will be putting all of those interviews together for review by Harvey and Steve, both for a book that will be done to not just chronicle this for history, but the true history of who made the difference, but also as a toolkit that can be utilized hopefully by other battleground states that they can leverage and then really take to higher heights. The beautiful thing is that in many of the battleground states, there are already the core components of what made the difference in Georgia. They just need to be organized and coordinated in a way to make them more efficient and effective. A couple of those were done in the most recent days. A couple of the interviews were done by Gloria Tinubu. Dr. Tinubu is on with us tonight, and just wanted to note, Gloria, if you had any comments about the interviews that you have completed.
Thank you, Ray. I just wanted to just echo what you said about the fact that there have been people who've been at this for a very long time. And there are some newcomers. We had a lot of young people, high school students also involved in the process. So on the one end, you had people who'd been involved for, you know, since the 1960s, and you've had people who just recently became involved, but nevertheless, they were a part of the miracle and made a significant impact. So that's it.
And how many hours of interviews have you done?
Probably about 18 hours total, close to 50 different participants.
Wow, amazing. Now you've done that all from Georgia, but have you now talked with Jan Bendor in Michigan as well?
No, Jan, not as yet.
So Jan, you want to give us a hint about what you're going to tell Ray about what's happened and what's happening in Michigan?
Well, thank you. I am in awe of what Georgia did. I'm also very proud of the several hundred people in Michigan who went to Georgia and the many more who pitched in with money and postcards. We got some really nice thank you notes from Georgia voters about what we did. It was a thrill to help. We are not exactly believers in miracles, however, because most of what we've done in Michigan is the result of sheer cunning. We have been working on the 2020 election for over 6 years. Even before the 2016 fiasco, we've been attacking gerrymandering, which is one of our biggest problems, and it's about to be solved. We've been introducing bills over and over again to expand voting rights, election day registration, early voting, way early voting, and a lot more. And we hadn't been able to get very far on those things. In 2010, Common Cause had a great documentary about gerrymandering, and everybody said, oh, we can do something. Everybody sat around and talked about it. And my organization, the Michigan Election Reform Alliance, got kind of impatient with all the talk and no action. And a lot of ego stuff. We all know how that works. Even in the election integrity and voting rights movement, there's a lot of ego. So we finally decided after the 26th election, which had been pretty much the bottom for us, that something really needed to get done. And we held meetings at the end of November of 2016, and we started organizing. And very soon, with the result of some very dedicated lawyers who wrote our anti-gerrymandering ballot initiative and some amazing people on the ground and a field organizer who should be cloned, we got 435,000 signatures turned in for a constitutional amendment. And part of the battle that we'd had with the other organizations, and then they didn't want to agree with this, they wanted total control, they didn't even want to give us money, was that the ACLU, which was one of our competitors, unfortunately, they went off and did another proposal, which added a huge number of details to the right to vote in Michigan, which we actually didn't have a right to vote in our constitution at all. So they guaranteed that you would be able to vote absentee with no excuse. They guaranteed that you could register all the way up to election day. You could register to vote, apply to register to vote at any state government office. If you were a foreign resident, you had the right to get your ballot 45 days in advance. So there were a whole lot of those things that got passed. And most wonderfully, we had legalizing marijuana on the ballot. That was proposal one. And that's the part that I think was a miracle, the luck to be on the ballot with marijuana. And marijuana, of course, passed stupendously well. Well, they actually didn't, if you consider they had, they were the only ones with really serious opposition. But the anti-gerrymandering independent citizens redistricting passed with 61%. We had the election rights bill amendment pass 67%. So that set us up really well for 2020. And then in addition, my organization went to work and decided that the city of Detroit, with almost 500,000 registered voters, did not have a single election drop box for absentee ballots, not one single one. And this is a city that is spread out almost as widely as Los Angeles. So, and only, you know, 50% or so have cars, and the public transportation is terrible. So how are we going to fix that? Well, we we surveyed the clerks in 1500 jurisdictions. They all love the idea of getting more drop boxes. We pressured the Secretary of State to fund more drop boxes out of the CARES Act money because it was legitimate under that. And we also got a lot of private money, and lo and behold, we have 1,000 more drop boxes in the state of Michigan than we had before. And in particular, in the city of Detroit, we got 35 of them. And in the county of Wayne, which is the county around Detroit with a lot of population, almost 100. That was voted by the Wayne County Board of Commissioners, which we persuaded to vote a resolution to level the playing field for voters in their county. So this was a really major move. We also had a huge number of young volunteers. It was wonderful. People coming in, and we organized them and deployed them in 10 counties to be challengers in the election. And if you saw the terrible video of what happened at Detroit's Central Count Center, the TCF Center in Detroit, where all those crazy Republicans were pounding on glass windows. We had people there who stopped them. We got them reported to police. We actually got the cooperation of the Republican director of their challengers to, he admitted that his people had no training. They didn't know the law. They'd been sent there by Laura Cox, the state Republican chairman, with no preparation. And he said, you guys know the law. If anybody's breaking it, send them to me. Now that's bipartisan cooperation. And as a result, the election workers gave our challengers hugs and kisses. They were so grateful because they'd been under tremendous intimidation and threat. These people were literally hanging over their shoulders, touching stuff. They're not supposed to do any of this. So I think the central count survived because we were able to get a lot of people of goodwill to intervene in that horrible situation. And we're going to be working on making it an even more effective next year. I would say to those states, not the 26 that have direct democracy, voter initiated laws and amendments, work on getting that in your state constitution, because that is the ultimate backstop to the corruption that we've seen in Republican legislatures. And I'll shut up.
All right, well, listen, let's take that on after we shut down the recording. We're at the end of our recorded time. We'll go another 20 minutes for kibitzing, and this is a great thing to talk. We still have 58 people with us now, so stay with us if you like. This has been our 54th election protection, grassroots emergency election protection Zoom. We will reconvene next week. There was a mistaken message. We will reconvene next week on June 21st. We will take up a Senate Bill 4, the John Lewis Act. Joel will have a document for us to sign, to discuss, and we will continue with this amazing series of discussions. Thank you, Ray Lutz, for your report and your great work in Arizona. Charles Moreland, Ray McQuendon, Gloria Tinubu, so many others of you who've been on the case here. It's really spectacular. Thank you, Mike Hirsch and Steve Caruso for engineering. And we will sign off now. Goodbye to all you people in PRN FM. And we'll see you again next week, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, on the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Zoom number 55.